Well, if you had been listening carefully to Esther when she was talking, she actually covered the ground pretty adequately. However, I will do my best to fill in any gaps. And at any rate, I trust the message of this chapter will be registered firmly on your minds, and you'll come away saying, salvation comes from the Lord. If I had to choose a text, actually, it would be the 8th verse of Jonah chapter 2, which reads like this: those who cling to worthless idols forfeit the grace that could be theirs. Those who cling to worthless idols forfeit the grace that could be theirs. You could preach a sermon on that, and I'm sure Jonah didn't have in mind the preparation of a sermon at those moments he spent inside the fish's belly. I'm not going to argue the toss about whether fish can swallow human beings or not. One simple fact satisfies me, that the Lord provided a great fish. The Lord knew how big Jonah was, and the Lord knew what fish do in the sea, and he made sure that this particular fish was adequate for the job, I can assure you. And we need not spend too much time going over that ground, but look to see what this message in the chapter brings home to us. Jonah was a prophet in the northern kingdom of Israel. And there's one little verse in 2 Kings 14, verse 25, which tells us that this Jonah, the son of Amittai, was instrumental in actually protecting the people of Israel from their enemies. And he had something in the Jewish mind, at least, of a record of his prophetic ministry. He was fulfilling his prophetic ministry in the 8th century BC, about the same time as Isaiah, and it was about the same time of the first Olympic Games in Greece. Quite shakes you when you think that, doesn't it? Suddenly realize that the bird of the Bible is actually the same world in which we live. And those events were taking place in the 8th century BC. Now, I'm obliged, of course, to go quickly over the ground of the first chapter. Jonah heard the voice of the Lord. The people of Nineveh, the capital of the province of Assyria in that time, were in a state of absolute wickedness, and they deserved the judgment of God. But in his mercy, he wished to send Joseph to preach to them and to give them the opportunity of repenting. The reason we don't know, but Joseph decided at that moment in his life that he wasn't going to do what God wanted him to do. And to make sure of that, he would do the exact opposite of what God wanted him to do. Instead of going east to the city of Nineveh, he went west to the city of Tarshish, which is, I believe, somewhere in the coast of Spain. He went down to Joppa. He found a ship on its way to Tarshish, paid his fare and went aboard. He was obviously a unique character. The other seamen on board ship found him a little strange and tried to understand what he was doing. The Lord who sent the great fish and the Lord who sent Jonah on his journey was also the one who sent a wind. Another miraculous wind, a wind which was severe, and the ship ran into severe storms. All those sailors, and sailors very often are, have an awareness of the unknown, the unnatural, the supernatural. And all these sailors were really fighting for their life because they felt this particular storm was going to bring the ship to an end. It began to break up. They had to throw a lot of their stuff overboard. And they were crying each to their own gods. And Jonah, nevertheless, was lying asleep in the ship. And the captain of the ship went down to him, Jonah, wake up. We're going to sink. We're going to flee. This ship's going down. Come up and pray to your God. And they asked him, tell us who's responsible for making all the trouble for us. And they cast lots, and the lot fell on Jonah. And they came to him and said, what have you done? Where have you come from? What is going on in your life? Because you appear to be the cause of this trouble. And Jonah knew what was happening. And he had already told them, that he was actually running away from his God. So they began to put two and two together and saw the explanation for the disaster they were facing. And Jonah said, the only thing you can do is to throw me overboard. He realized he was responsible. At that moment, guilt hit him pretty deeply, and he knew that he was responsible for the trouble. They threw him overboard. And as you know, God provided a great fish. And Jonah was swallowed by the fish. And in this chapter, the scene is entirely inside the belly of a fish. And this whole book of Jonah demonstrates the sovereignty of God. I believe this is its primary message, really. God provides. God creates the miracle. God is Lord over all things. He manages the weather. He overrules all our circumstances. God really is sovereign. And we need to appreciate that increasingly. And all that God has done in the world, all that he's doing and all that he will do, is out of his sovereign will. We are not free agents. We can do as we like. We have freedom, but our lives are lived within the reality of the sovereignty of God. And we may be in the same position as Jonah, running away from God. We may have chosen to have our own way. We're going to dictate our own circumstances. We're going to manage our lives ourselves. But when it comes down to brass tacks, God is absolutely sovereign, and he's sovereign in our lives as well as he was in Jonah's. He, at this stage, was in a hopeless state of affairs. I challenge any of you to say whether you have ever been in a more difficult situation than Jonah was in this chapter. Hopeless, chaotic situation all around you, no prospect of deliverance or salvation, and the end looks totally black. At the moment he was swallowed by that fish, he thought the end had come for him. He thought the end had come for all his life and ministry. He thought he had come absolutely to a last position. God brings us sometimes to circumstances a bit like that. When we have no resource or no opportunity, no hope whatsoever, but to cry to him. And this is exactly what Jonah did. From the inside of the fish, Jonah prayed to the Lord, his God. Maybe you need to think a bit more clearly as to what he was happening. He was inside the fish. Seaweed was gathering around his head. He managed somehow to breathe. I can only imagine that water that the great fish was swallowing didn't completely drown him. He was able to think. He was able to speak. He was able to pray. The circumstances are never so difficult that you can't pray. We need to remember that. When life is difficult, when the problems seem insoluble, there is never a moment in our lives when we can't pray. And I think this is really a lesson to us. Jonah, inside this great fish, prayed to the Lord. And, of course, our theme this morning is really the prayer that he uttered. And God gave him a remarkable deliverance. The moment came when God commanded the fish, and it vomited Jonah into dry land. It was all over. By now, Jonah was thinking very differently. There was worship in his heart. There was gratitude in his whole being. And he even comes to this conclusion, which we'll think about in a minute, that those who cling to worthless idols forfeit the grace that could be theirs. This was his message, and I suspect that when he eventually arrived in Nineveh, he preached on that text. Though the circumstances in the story as it works out show a very different side of Jonah. Though the one thing that's clear right through the story is God's sovereignty, God's plan, God's grace, God's goodness. He is worth our trust, and he's capable of doing the impossible in our lives. He's capable of fulfilling all his purposes, and our lives are best left in his hands, and in his hands totally. Because God is gracious. Anyway, let's have a word about Jonah's faith. Because I notice in this prayer, he seems to demonstrate that in the most terrible of circumstances, he still has a faith in God. You look at verse 4. I said, I have been banished from your sight, yet will I look again towards your holy temple. Now, he may be using language there which comes from his religious background, but he had this sense in his mind that God is in his holy temple, is in his place. He will never be displaced. He will never be pushed aside. He will never be overthrown. He will never be superseded. His power is absolute, and he dwells in his holy temple. I love that phrase for that reason. And later in the verse, later in the same passage, he says, when my life was ebbing away, I remembered you, Lord, and my prayer rose to you in your holy temple. Jonah was in a hopeless situation, but he realized that his only hope was the Lord his God. And he remembered that the Lord had a reputation for stability, for grace, for kindness. I think Jonah's whole life was turned over at this moment. And he realized what a God he had, because he has no other hope whatsoever. And so he goes on to tell us that those who cling to worthless idols, the alternatives to God, they forfeit the grace that could be theirs. I remembered the Lord, and my prayer rose to your holy temple. And he came to a conclusion, and his conclusion was verse 8, those who cling to worthless idols forfeit the grace that could be theirs. Now, can I just elaborate that on Jonah's behalf? What he was saying was that you have the alternative in life, either to worship idols or to worship the living God. Oh, you say to me, I'm not religious. Nonsense. Everybody is religious. It's a feature of the human being that he must be a worshipper. And we choose the objects of our worship. And the objects of our worship determine our character and even our destiny. I was reminded of a psalm here. Why do the nations say, where is their God? They're still saying that. They look at the church, they look at the believing community and say, where is your God? And sometimes we're hard-pressed and we hesitate to say, well, our God is actually in me. And you think, oh no, that's not good enough. Where is now their God, they say. And he says, the psalmist answers, our God is in heaven. He's in his holy temple. He does whatever he pleases. Our God is supreme. He is eternal. He is all-powerful. And he does whatever he pleases. And what he pleases is good. And he contrasts the living God with the idols that all men are worshipping. Their idols are silver and gold, the creation of men, made by the hands of men. And one of the features about the idols that men worship is that they promise to deliver, and they never do. Listen, they have mouths but can't speak. They have ears, they can't hear. They have noses, but they can't smell. They have hands, but they cannot feel. They have feet, but they can't walk. Nor can they utter a sound with their throats. Those who make them are like unto them, and so will all who trust in them. This is elaboration of Jonah's sermon from the fish's mouth. He's saying something to our generation. Forget all the myth and story that people discredit this picture. This is God's truth coming from Jonah's thought while in the fish's belly. They who follow worthless idols forfeit the grace that could be theirs. And men are worshipping idols. The idols they worship are the things that they live for. If you want to know what your idols are, here's a suggestion. Ask yourself, what do you do with most of your time and most of your money? And you'll get an answer. And in Jonah's thought here too is, the grace of God is worthy of your worship. God himself is worthy of your discipleship. And you won't forfeit the grace of God. You will enjoy the grace of God. You'll know the grace of God. And that grace will be evident in your character. They that make them will be like unto them. And so is everybody who trusts in them. The same grace of God changes our lives. But idolatry leads us downwards. It deters the goodness that God might give us. It blinds us to the grace of God. And that's really Jonah's sermon from that moment. So it leads him, you see, to thanksgiving, renewal, and salvation. Those who cling to worthless idols, he says, forfeit the grace that could be theirs. But I will sing a song of thanksgiving. I will sacrifice to you what I have vowed I will make good. Salvation comes from the Lord. There's a message in this chapter which Jonah gives us, even in the midst of his circumstances. So much then for Jonah's faith. Finally, a word about Jonah and Jesus. Because Jonah was the only prophet in the Old Testament that Jesus compared himself with. Listen to this. Then some of the Pharisees and teachers of the law said to him, "Teacher, we want to see a miraculous sign from you." It's like the psalm, you see. Where is your God? Show us your God. Do something. Prove to us that our eyes can see, our hands can handle, that your God is real. And the Pharisees approached Jesus like that. They wanted to see whether he would give them evidence of his claims to divinity, to superior power, to grace and wisdom. And Jesus answered, "A wicked and adulterous generation asks for a miraculous sign. But none will be given except the sign of the prophet Jonah. For as Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the huge fish, so the Son of Man will be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. The men of Nineveh will stand up at judgment with this generation and condemn it, for they repented at the preaching of Jonah," which is anticipating chapter 3. The point Jesus is making is that the only sign you're going to be given is the sign that was the prophet Jonah. Jonah was 3 days and three nights. The third day, Jesus was raised from the dead. The sign that is given to our generation, to every generation, is the resurrection of Jesus. And the resurrection of Jesus is the heart and foundation stone of the Christian faith. Deny that, and you forsake the grace that would be yours. Believe that, and you will know the deliverance and salvation that Jonah experienced. So we have an identity with Jonah and with Jesus, because I could take the message one stage further, that not only is Jonah's death and burial and resurrection compared to Jesus' death and burial and resurrection, but it is an illustration of what the gospel of Christ does for us. We were buried with him through baptism, and we were raised with him through the power of his resurrection. And this is the message of the gospel that changes human lives from hopeless cases into those who have thanksgiving in their hearts, power in their lives, grace in their behavior, and glory in their expectation. That's Jonah's message, that's Jesus' message, and it's our message for this morning. Amen.